Today's episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Built Bar. You know, today I had the chocolate and raspberry Built Bar, and it was the best one yet. They're good for you, and they taste as good as candy. So why wouldn't you take it? Make sure to take advantage of our promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first box at BuiltBar.com.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 5th day of May, say good to Mayo 2020, we are going to do another rewind where we talk to Larry Herndon, a member of the 1984 Detroit Tigers. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app, or also available wherever you get your podcasts. When you're at home being responsible these days, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. You can find us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We are on Instagram at Locked On MLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. I want to thank the good folks at Past Pros who, way back when, helped me out with this podcast that you heard right now, which I originally recorded back in 2016 as a member of the Sully Baseball Daily Podcast. You have to forgive me, folks. Your pal Sully's still feeling a little bit under the weather, and I'm going to just beat it and put out a bunch of new shows for the rest of this week, but I thought you'd really like to listen to this. This is not the whole interview. This is a part of the interview where we talk specifically about his playing on the 1984 Detroit Tigers team. We had a second part of the interview where we talked about his days with the Giants and coming up through the Cardinals organization. It was great, but this being part of the 84 Tigers, a magical team, a magical season, of which he had a key final moment of that World Series, was a lot of fun to talk to him. He's a very nice, generous man. So here's rewind back to 2016 when I spoke to former Tiger star Larry Herndon.
You came over to Detroit in a trade for Dan Schatzeter. I'm still not convinced he's retired. I'm still convinced there's somewhere. I'll turn on like the Blue Jays, or I'll turn on the Brewers or someone, and there's Schatzeter warming up.
Oh, that's funny.
When you found out you were traded, what was it, how did you find out, and what were you thinking when you were going to get dealt to the American League?
Well, you know, I sort of felt like I was going to get traded that winter. But I end up, I believe, Sparky Anderson called me. Told me we had just traded. But it was a straight pleasure, especially after talking to Sparky, and he told me, you know, what was going on in Detroit. I don't know. It's hard to describe. I mean, like they were saying, it's the greatest year that you had. That was one of the greatest teams, or the greatest stretch of baseball that I have ever been through. You know.
Well, it must give you a little bit of pride. It must give you a little bit of pride whenever, you know, because the Cubs are off to this amazing start this year, that anytime they talk about that, they immediately compare, they say, we haven't seen a start like this since the 1984 Tigers. It's like the Tigers start that you guys got off to is, to this day, the standard of the best start that anyone's ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, that start, it was, you know, you look back on it and it's like, wow, did we really do that?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, we did. And but when you were in it, well, we were just, I mean, after the 83 season, the September sort of 83, Baltimore won the thing, but we felt like we were a better team because toward the end there, we were beating Baltimore.
Right.
And they went on to win the World Series in 83. So we came to spring training knowing that we were pretty good. Without a doubt. There was no doubt in our mind that we were the best team in the American League. So we just went to spring training and worked. But that first 40 games, I mean, it was just every day just grinding, and things were happening right for us. And it was just, Let's just keep. Don't even look back to yesterday. Don't look forward to tomorrow. Let's go out here and get it done. And it was somebody new every day making something happen. It was just, you know, it's really hard to describe. You know, being in it though, it was just so smooth and the way it should have been. It's like the script was written and we went out and got it done.
And a ton of close games. I mean, I have the schedule up in front of me. You win 35. Those of you who don't remember, this team won 35 of the first 40 games they played. I mean, this division was done before Memorial Day. I remember. I mean, that this was it by. Let's say I'm going to have the exact number here, but by the 24th of May, the Tigers were 8.5 games in first. I mean, it was like, oh, the season's over, and it's not June. And you went on a couple more big runs, wound up winning the division by 15 games. And the likes, I mean, if you take a look at the stats, you had the one great year from Willie Hernandez out of the bullpen, and you had just a bunch of very good seasons from a lot of people.
Right.
It wasn't like the one dominant player overwhelmed it. It was just everyone had a good year that year, and it was amazing.
Yeah. And that's sort of the, you know, like the 7 years I played there, that's just sort of the approach of everybody. Like, whatever it takes to get the win today, let's get it done. And we had faith. That was so much faith in that guy that was on the mound that day or that guy at the plate that day that it's going to get done. I don't care who it is. It could be Randy Coons. It could be, Rusty Coons. It could be Tom Brookins. It could be a number of guys. We had that faith that was going to happen. But my point is that those big stats wasn't there, but it seems like everybody was so focused on whatever it takes to win. They weren't really – It was the most unselfish group of guys that I've ever been around. And it was just so sane in the clubhouse. You walk in there, it was just like family. And we knew what we had to do when we got on the field.
Well, you set the tone for a lot of that, quite frankly, because in 82 and 83 were probably your two best years statistically, certainly at that point. I mean, you're batting 300 or around there, hitting 20-some-odd home runs, driving around 90 runs, having a high slugging percentage and everything. And then in that offseason, and you're playing full-time, and then in the offseason they bring in Rupert Jones to platoon with you. Was there a moment of feeling like, oh, what the heck is this about, or realizing, no, this makes us better. Well, let's go do this.
This makes us better. Let's go do this. This is all out. See, this is what this team, this group was about. We're like, the more good ball players you got, the better we are.
Yeah.
So Rupert was just an outstanding player and person. He fit right into what we were doing. I didn't have any complaints about that. I mean, bring in as many. I had enough confidence in myself to know my game is going to be okay. Now, don't worry about that. So it was just great. And Rupert, just like I said, I hated to lose Rupert, you know, in the 85 year.
Yeah.
After he left, that hurt us, you know. So.
All right, let's get down to it because you guys win the division easy. It's not even, I don't think anyone even gave you a challenge. And then you swept the Royals for the pennant. This is back when it was the last year was best of five. So you just swept the Royals and. Royals had a nice team, but come on, who are we kidding? And you guys get to the World Series. Everyone in the world thinks it's going to be Tigers-Cubs. The Padres somehow win and take that lead early. And I remember watching that World Series. And I had Gary Templeton on this program talking about that playoffs of World Series. And nobody gave the Padres any chance. But they got out to that 2-0 lead, and when it starts to starts to get further, it's like, okay, it's first inning, second inning. Okay, we're in the fifth now. And you're thinking, if they can steal a game, you're doing all that sort of, you know, the machinations going on in your mind. If they steal game one, will that be could they upset them? And with nobody on and two outs, Mr. Parrish hits a double. You came up against Mr. Mark Thurman. Now, can you please talk me through whatever memories you have of that 3-1 pitch you got from Mr. Mark Thurmond in the top of the fifth of game one.
Okay. I have a great, really good memory of it. I'll tell you this. We talk about 84, but I'm going to go back just one step here to 83. Mm-hmm. We had a guy in the clubhouse who was a great leader, great, I don't know, influence on everybody that was in that clubhouse named Enos Cabell. I don't know if you remember Enos.
Oh, I remember Enos
played with. Yeah, Enos played with us in 83, and just wonderful man, taught us a lot of stuff. But that day before we got there, Enos visited us. He came by the clubhouse before the game, gave us a little rundown on Mr. Mark Thurmond, because he had went back to Houston in the National League. He said he's gonna try to set you up. He's going to throw these little breaking balls to you, and then he's going to work his fastball away. You know, if he can get behind, he's going to work his fastball away. So I got ahead of him, and all I was looking for is a fastball away. And he threw me one exactly where I was looking. And fortunately, I got the barrel on it and hit it out. So I had a little scouting report, and I was looking for that pitch, and I got it. I mean, that spot, that everything, the pitch, the speed, everything, I had it all and locked in my mind, and I got it, and I moved.
Well, so what you're trying to tell me is that while I and every Tiger fan on the planet Earth give you credit for that, we should at least get an assist for Enos Cabell.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yes, sir. So I just had a good scouting report there, and you know, fortunately I got the pitch and I didn't miss it. I didn't foul it back. So, I don't think we looked at it as – I don't think we had any doubt in our mind about losing that game, even when we were behind.
Well, keep in mind, as a fan, I had just seen them beat the Cubs, who I thought the Cubs were so much better than they were. So I thought maybe this was kind of like, the Cinderella team. They're finally in the finally in the World Series. Maybe. Oh no, not gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, I can't really agree with you there about. I don't know. I didn't play against the Cubs that year, and we were packed to go to Chicago. And it was just a sort of a shock the way that last game for the Cubs turned out. And then we had to catch up. We were going to go to Chicago the next morning. And if Chicago loses, we had to pack and leave that night about 11:30, between 11:30 and midnight. So
right.
We had to scramble as soon as we heard the Cubs had lost and go to San Diego. But we thought San Diego was a pretty good team also. I mean, I don't think that was nothing. They had a pitching staff that was outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
And they had good players. I mean, you talk about Gary Templeton and McReynolds, you know, Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
And they had some players, you know, Steve Garvey. They had a pretty good team themselves. So we didn't take them lightly at all.
All right, folks. This show is brought to you by Built Bar, and let me tell you, they're terrific. They're tasty, they're healthy, they're everything that you'd want to have. It's a protein bar that tastes like candy. A lot of protein bars you have to eat and kind of wince while you're going through it, but not like Built Bar. 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut free flavors. There's some mint chocolate, which I love, and the chocolate raspberry, which is fantastic. And the bars are covered in 100% chocolate, so someone with a sweet tooth like me really, really loves it. But they're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're great for the health-conscious guy and trying to act more healthy. As we're all living this kind of strange period of our life, we want to be more healthy, don't we? Well, if you want to maintain your weight or lose weight and indulging on a delicious treat, you're not going to do any better than Built Bar. Let me tell you, they got 20 grams of protein, 170 calories. That's nothing. 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carb. It's fantastic stuff. So make sure to check out BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order. You know, I love getting my dinners together, but I also know that now is not the time to be going out to your local restaurant. So what do? How do you support them in this strange time? You do what I do and use Postmates. Now, what you do is you can order from all your local restaurants and help them during this crazy time and still get some really great food. And they have Postmates Pickup, where you can go pick up your food there, and when you have it delivered, they can drop it right at your front door. Don't even have to come in, no contact or anything like that. And not just food, but they can also go to Walgreens and 7-Eleven and drop out stuff from there outside your door. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Start your free deliveries. Download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Larry Herndon and his memories of the 1984 Tigers.
Yeah, and I heard that everybody was talking about that we would probably be a better matchup for the, you know, it would be a better matchup between the Tigers and Cubs, but I don't know. You know, like I said, I didn't keep up with the Cubs at that time. I didn't know what the deal was there, but we ran into a pretty good team, and we were just playing well.
So they get to that point with two outs. The great Willie Hernandez, who had that incredible season on the mound, and I believe it was Gwynn was the last batter, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, let me double-check that. Yeah, Tony Gwynn hits a fly ball to you. So, as a kid, I always used to fantasize about making the last out of the World Series. You have actually done that. So, just, you're in left field, the great Tony Gwynn is at the plate. Just tell me if anything's going through your mind, what's going on as you see that fly ball heading right for you, and at that moment when you became champs.
Well, you know, like, again, we had, you know, had a scouting report. I was over toward left. And Tony, you know, there you go. He hit the ball over. There it is. It's up. It's a semi-line drive to the left. And it's like, I'm over here, but I got to run to get it. So once I saw it off his bat and up, right, It's like I know it's two outs. And everything just slowed down. The whole world, just the whole, I mean, it's like everything was like in pure slow motion. Wow. And I'm running like the devil, but it just seemed like it was in slow motion. So in my mind, it's like, wow, this is what I've been waiting on all my playing career, is a world championship. If I can catch this ball, that, I mean, you would believe that went through my mind.
I believe it. I totally believe it.
Here it is. Squeeze it. So I just run, and like I said, everything just seemed to be in such slow motion. And then I get it, and wow, I squeeze it, and I hold on to it, and then everything just sort of erupts. And that's when everything speeds up. The fans start to jump out of the stands. It's like, I better get to this dugout, or I'm not going to make it there without my shirt, hat, and whatever, this ball or my glove. It was just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. I mean, I can't describe the joy, you know, of, like I said, you're playing all your life, and this is your first world championship, and there it is. Hold on to it. So that's what it was. But, like, I can't describe the slowness of it. It was very slow.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, that's kind of how I was hoping you would describe it, because that's just that sense of all this going through your mind, and you never have to wonder, am I ever going to win a championship? Am I ever going to? Nope. If I just catch this. I got it.
Just hold on. Yeah.
And so do you remember the celebration or the parade or anything like that? I mean, or is that all just like a blur?
Well, I remember going, you know, making it to the dugout and the joy that was there between those, you know, my teammates and or whatever, and the hugs and how can I put it? The joy in the clubhouse. I remember all that. It sticks with you. It'll never leave.
Yeah.
I remember us having to stay in the clubhouse. We stayed there, I don't know, probably into the night, just enjoying one another. So, yeah, it sticks with you. It stays with you. The parade bands it out in quite a few ways. I rode with Dwight Lowry, who was just passed away. He was one of my great teammates. That stands out, me and him sitting there and enjoying each other and the crowd. And riding in the convertible together. So I'll never forget that. And so it was really a great day. I mean, I remember the people in Detroit. They always treated us just wonderful. I mean, it was just a party. It was a great time.
Yeah, you've been very generous with your time, and I really, really do appreciate it. But I got to bring up we started talking about Candlestick, and I distinctly remember being at Candlestick Park the last day of the 87 season. And it was the Giants were going to the playoffs, and I was there with a friend of mine just watching. It was like Fan Appreciation Day, last day of the regular season. So we're there. And throughout the day and throughout the game there, they were putting up updates of the final game between the Tigers and the Blue Jays. Because we were all, you know, we didn't have the internet back then. You could follow it the way you do now, but that bizarre end of the year, what's going to happen? Are the Blue Jays, who I thought were going to win the World Series that year because they were so good, and just the Tigers couldn't lose. The Blue Jays suddenly couldn't win. You get to that three-game series, and that final day. Just give me a capsule version of that completely bananas 1987 September where you somehow caught the best team in baseball.
Right. That was the most wild and probably second to 84 most joy I've had in a season.
Right.
Because of the way the guys in our clubhouse just grind and stayed with it. But like you said, that Blue Jay team was really stacked that year. They had a really, really good team. But we had a group of really tough guys that stayed with it. But that last 2 weeks, the games against the Blue Jays and the Tigers, they were all one-run games.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was the most intense baseball that I've ever played in a stretch like that. I mean, the crowds in Toronto, the crowds in Detroit, and it's hard to describe it. I mean, the World Series, you get a feeling in the World Series, which is different than any other baseball you play.
Right.
But these last 2 weeks had that feeling. So you were sort of drained daily trying to catch them. And we got help from Milwaukee. They went to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee beat them. And kept everything together until those last 3 days. But, we kept plugging, and we got to that last day. And all I was thinking about that game is Frank Sinatra is pitching a heck of a game here. We got to find a way to get him a run. I don't know. I don't even remember what inning it was. It was early in the game, so I hit a home run. I never thought it would hold up. But we were just trying to get Frankie a run against Jimmy Key, who was
unbelievable that year.
Unbelievably tough. I mean, that was no fun. I mean, I usually didn't have trouble against lefties, but this guy here always, him and Frank was, I'm glad Frank came to Detroit because he gave me trouble. But Jimmy Key was just a master.
And
he made one mistake, and I got enough of it. The ball didn't go that far over the fence, but I got enough of it for a home run. Never thought it would hold up. I was just a home run. I've hit a home run before. Okay, let's go play defense. Let's hold on to this because Frankie's pitching and Frankie shut him out.
For those of you who don't remember that the last basically about 14 days of the season, the Tigers and the Blue Jays played each other seven times. Three of them were walk-off wins. Two of them were extra inning games. I mean, they just were like all seven games were one-run games. And it just could have a bounce here or a bounce there, and the Blue Jays would have been in the playoffs. Instead, a bounce here and a bounce there, and it was one of the most intense about 12 days of baseball. And I'm neither a Tiger nor a Blue Jay fan, and I was losing my mind over it.
Yeah, it was intense. I mean, it really was. And it goes out to the last day of the season, which made it much more intense. Wow. I mean, from the minor leagues, high school, everywhere I've been, I've never, had a season championship decided the last day until the end. That was the first time that had ever happened to me. But like I said, it was really an intense thick pressure day right there.
And you have, and that was, you were a part-time player that year, but you had a great year. I mean, you batted 324 that year, and you had one of the best slugging percentages you had of your career that year. I mean, you had a, as Sparky just had a way of plugging in, whether it was you or Johnny Grubb or Dave Bergman, yeah, whomever it was, he just managed to put in the right guy at the right time and get right offense from them. It was unbelievable.
Yes. And like I said, we just, we had this thing about, you know, doing what it takes to win. We had the right guys to do that. I mean, the attitude and the approach was whatever it takes. So, but Sparky was great at that. He knew the right people to have around him. He knew when to use them. He was the all-time best. He was a wonderful man.
Do you still keep in touch with a lot of people from the from your Tiger days?
Well, there are times I run into a few, and there are phone numbers. We call each other from time to time. Dan Peacher and myself, we stay in touch pretty good.
Yeah, I'm in Palo Alto. He's a native of Palo Alto. I'm recording this from the birthplace of Dan Petrie, so there you go.
Okay. Yeah. He's a different cat. He's a California guy that moved to Detroit, and he's been there ever since his playing days. And putting up with those winters and loving every bit of it. He loves the snow and ice. So I stay in touch with him, mm-hmm, but more than most. Mm-hmm. When I was coaching, I was running the chat a lot.
Yeah.
Me and him would talk. We still stay in touch. And I run into most of the guys through fantasy camps or this, that, and the other in Detroit from time to time. So. Well, they always brothers. They always be my brothers.
Well, and I can tell you from my many Tiger fan friends, you never have to buy a drink for the rest of your life if you ever beat any of them, because they're all, anyone who played a day in the '84 Tigers is just beloved. So
yeah.
Well,
thank you. It goes right back to everybody. I mean, the people in Detroit. We love them right back. We still love them right back. You know, when we go there, it's just really a beautiful thing, you know, having those reunions and seeing them, and it's still a love affair between the two of them.
I'm so glad I was able to go. I did manage to go to one game at Tiger Stadium, and I actually saw it the best way you can. It was, they were playing Toronto. It was 91, and you still had Whitaker, and you still had Sparky, and you still had Alan Trammell, and a few of the other people were still there, and they were playing Toronto, and so the place was jam-packed.
Uh-huh.
And so I got to be there, not empty. It was there. It was a day game. It was a beautiful day game.
Yes.
Standing room only. Tiger fans going crazy. But there were a lot of Canadians there waving their Canada flags and rooting for Robbie Alomar and Joe Carter. So that was. I'm glad that was how I experienced Tiger Stadium. That they're just packed and passionate. So.
Yeah, that brings. I mean, just describing it brings back memories. Did you see an octopus thrown on the field? Did anything get thrown on the field? Usually an octopus would fly from the stands or squid or something.
I'll tell you, I wasn't going to go down this path, but I will tell you two things that happened there. This is when the Blue Jays were really starting to become, you know, they were great when you guys played them. Then they had their makeover, so they brought in like Joe Carter and Robbie Alomar and I don't think Jack Morris was there yet, but, you know, they were starting to bring in more stars to establish stars. And Devon White, that was the name I was trying to think of.
So
Devon White was the first batter of the game, and he hit a home run on the second pitch of the game. Robbie Alomar then wound up hitting a home run on the third pitch. And then Joe Carter came up, and they threw at his head, and there's a bench-clearing brawl. And I turned to my dad. My dad and I used to go on these baseball trips. I turned to my dad and said, like, we're four pitches into this game. We can go if you want. I mean, this is – we have everything you want to have. And I'm going to guess it must have been around the sixth or seventh inning. It wasn't an octopus on the field. It was Morgana the Kissing Bandit.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
She jumped off the field and ran towards Olerud. Olerud freaked out, and Olerud ran to right field because he didn't know what the hell was going on. Robbie Alomar opened up his arms because he was more than willing to accept the kiss from Morgana. And Morgana gave Robbie Alomar a kiss, and the police came out, and the place went absolutely bananas. It was so much fun. So, yeah, no octopus thrown on the field, but Morgana being bandit. So I guess that's, that's Detroit.
Yeah, that's
something I could tell my kids. All right, Mr. Herndon, I really appreciate your time. This was a lot of fun for me because I remember those games like they were yesterday. I can't imagine what they must feel like for you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. I enjoy it. Thank you for calling.
All right, I want to thank everybody at Pass Pros for helping set up the interview I did with Larry Herndon a few years ago. Very nice, kind, generous man with his time and great memories. And I love him recalling catching that final out of the World Series. That's always been my fantasy, to make the final out of the World Series. Larry Herndon did. You can follow us on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and also all the social media sites. Make sure to go to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off. And this has been Locked On MLB for the 5th day of May 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.